Good day, nerds, and welcome to episode 197 of the Nerd Cantina Show. I'm your host, Ken, joined by my co-host, Steve, and we're going to recap this week's nerd news. We're going to begin in the biggest news in entertainment, and that is the Oscars wrap-up. Then we'll briefly talk a little bit about the deleted scenes from Batman, and then move into tech, where, of course, we're going to talk about NFTs and crypto, some hacking news, and a breakthrough in brain implants. A lot to get to. Let's get started.
Calling back all nerds.
Nerds!
Okay, and let's get started here in episode 197. I think it's appropriate to mention right out here at the beginning that we've realized this is, I guess, an anniversary of some sort. This last week, we crossed into 3 years of doing this show.
Yeah, we've been going strong. I wouldn't give us too much like credit for our willingness to do the show. I think it's more of a stubbornness to quit. I think it's
less of a mark of success as it is a mark of perseverance at this point in time.
For those that have been listening since the early days, we appreciate you. We really do. The show's kind of come a long way since then. We have gotten better at this, I think. And, you know, I still say you know a lot. I still say a lot. Like, I just can't fucking stop. I'm trying, you know. But I think as far as our banter and how we run the show, and we're pretty much churning them out at this point. We got it down. So we appreciate everybody listening. We appreciate everybody coming every week and getting your weekly nerd news here. And yeah, we don't have any plans to quit sometime soon yet either.
Yeah, so let's just jump into some entertainment talk. And of course,
how are we doing this? How are we doing this? Are we going over awards first?
I was going to say that I don't know what you're talking about. The only thing worth talking about with the Oscars.
All right, because I'm going to take up some time.
Coda's the winner.
That's
the only thing. Everything else was insignificant that took place at the Oscars. So, of course, let's just get into the talk of the craziness of the night. I really don't. I think I saw like two movies on the entire Oscars.
Dune won the most Oscars. Like, you got to love that.
I know, but all like insignificant ones, which we'll. Let's get there later. Let's lead it off with.
All right, you know, I got some things to say. West Philadelphia, born and raised.
Let's see, where are you going to take this? Because I find it, sure, there's all kinds of social commentary to throw at it. I just find it fascinating. it's phenomenal.
It's completely fascinating. And the societal reaction to it is also just amazing to me, fascinating. Like, this is the biggest social experiment, I think, since like the OJ trial.
I don't know, but it to me, it's the first Oscars that I regret not watching.
I caught that shit live. Like, I was just looking for something to watch on TV. I was like, oh, let me put it on for a second, see who's wore what, you know. Like, I was just gonna watch like maybe 15-20 minutes of it just to say I put it on, and I put it on at the sweet spot, man. Right at sweet spot. Because the way it aired in the United States, you know, like Chris Rock's telling a joke, and then, you know how they have that 10-second delay where, like, the whole screen goes mute, like, the screen kind of freezes, and then it cuts back? Bro, they had to hit a double delay. I have never seen a double delay in my life. No incident has ever happened on live TV to where they needed so much time that they hit that double button. And when it came back, there was no sound still, and all you see is Will Smith's last time when he was mouthing, "Keep my wife's name out of your fucking mouth." And I just jump up out of my couch like, what the fuck just happened? I immediately went to Twitter. I was like, Twitter's going to have it. Twitter's going to have it. And boom. Yep, the internet lost its shit.
Yeah, and there was all kinds of, you know, the foreign broadcast that just, they don't care about delays. Like,
oh yeah, the Japanese don't give a fuck about nothing. They're even translating that shit like in real time. It was amazing.
Yeah, so it wasn't long. I only knew about it because you started talking about it and started posting messages and stuff about it.
I got a 24-hour ban on Facebook 25 minutes into commenting on it, man. And, like, for the last day, I've been going absolutely fucking apeshit because the world has been dropping the firest memes I ever seen, and I can't share them, can't comment. I can't even like. I couldn't even like the fucking memes. Zuckerberg, you little bitch. It's fucking horrible. This is the worst day of my life.
it was absolutely great. I absolutely loved just diving into Twitter and just seeing how quick everybody churned out the memes and everything else. And I think my favorite one were the ones where they just replaced like a cartoon Will Smith and Chris Rock head on the classic Batman slapping Robin one, because when you look at it, like,
it's perfect almost.
It's exactly
just like, different angle. Just different that, angle.
No, I mean yeah, just a flip-flopping, but like the whole body language of Will Smith versus being Batman, like, it just works. Like, it's whoever illustrated that obviously had seen somebody get the shit slapped out of him before.
Oh yeah. Like, well, so one, all right, here I go. I'm gonna go on a little bit and then you can rank. One, to me, my opinion, and take it for what you want. I know a lot of people are gonna disagree. Will Smith is a bitch. Will Smith is a purebred 100% bitch. All right. My boy even commented on the thing right before I got the ban. My buddy put up a post that said, "Man, that West Philly sure came out of Phil." And I said, "Yeah, but that slap screamed Bel Air if I ever seen it." Like, you're going to assault a man, you close that motherfucking fist, and you drop that dude if it's about your wife. He gave him... Will Smith got pillow hands. All right, because even...
I mean, yeah, Chris Rock took it like a champ. Like, I mean, it stunned
him. I've smacked people at work and when I was a bouncer. I've opened home, smacked people at work. They still went to the floor. All right, they still go to the floor, okay? Like, they give you that look of, like, disbelief of, like, how did I end up here? Like, but... they still go to the floor. I cannot believe that, one, he laughs, and Jada, like, everybody's talking about how they made a joke about Jada's alopecia, and it was across the line, and blah, blah, blah. Jada wasn't distraught. Jada wasn't crying. She wasn't, like, embarrassed. She rolled her eyes. She gave an eye roll, like, oh, yeah, funny joke. Like, well, like, when someone tells a joke you've heard, like when you have a weird name, and somebody, like, makes fun of your name and tells the joke that you've heard a million times because you've had that name your entire life, that was the reaction she had to the joke. And then Will Smith looks over, gets in his fucking feelings, and then goes up and assaults a fucking comedian for doing his job.
Job is to say jokes. And like, you know, we've got a strong history on these award shows hiring people that tell jokes to be as uncomfortable as possible. That wasn't even it. Like, 100%. That wasn't even close.
100%. Like, so now I'm going to put this out there. I have daughters. I'm a like passionate man. I will knock a motherfucker out for saying something stupid. I promise you that. So I am not going to absolve myself from these situations. I'm not going to say I'm better than anybody else in these situations, but the insult will be proportionate to my reaction, right? Like, he told a bad joke. Now, in my mind, Will Smith should have started with the yelling of, keep my wife's name out of your fucking mouth. Because then, who knows? Maybe Chris Rock walks it back. Maybe Chris Rock says, hey, it was just a G.I. Jane joke. Will Smith yells it again. Again, I apologize. And we move on without an embarrassing moment, without Will Smith ruining one of the best nights of his career, without Will Smith ruining a night for anybody else, because every speech after that was awkward as shit.
Again, I didn't watch the Oscars.
The first thing I thought,
man, so many front runners for Oscars have just been saving their, you know, pick a humanitarian cause that they wanted to champion this time, and this is their platform, and they all have these speeches planned and to thank mom and dad, And then I was like, nobody listened. Nobody's talking about it today. I didn't hear a single thing being like, oh, this person gave a riveting speech about blank rights, right?
Oh, you none can, you can tell. Every like, every white person that went on that stage after that was just like, I really don't want to be here right now. Like, I just won the best award of my career, and I really don't even want to be up here right now. You know, I just, and I can't understand the vilifying of a Chris Rock that is known for doing this stuff. I can't understand the praising of a Will Smith. You know how many women I've seen post on Facebook, if my man don't go up and smack you in the face for calling me that, I don't want him. If my husband, if my husband doesn't have my back like that, I don't want him. I'm gonna let you know right now, bitch, I ain't got your back like that. Okay, I'm gonna let you know right now, I ain't catching a case because somebody made fun of your bald ass head. Like, no.
And especially, again, context matters. And like, if I'm at the grocery store and somebody just calls out my wife, all right, maybe.
Right? I'm gonna tell him, watch your mouth. But I'm gonna tell him, watch your mouth. And if you keep going, now you're trying to offend, right?
Right. But if me and my wife walk into a public roasting room, knowing that like the event is here to celebrate and to also poke fun at the profession, no, you gotta have a little thicker skin than that. Like, the context matters.
Well, and what gets me too is about the women that are defending this and are championing this, like all you fucking hoes haven't been ripping on bald men for fucking decades. Like, all you fucking bitches haven't been chastising anyone under 5'10 with a bald fucking head for your entire fucking lives. Ew, he's bald. Ew, he's bald. Like, meropenal baldness is a form of alopecia. We ain't sitting there crying for the George Costanzas of the goddamn world, okay? Nobody is getting on anybody for the millions of bald men for the last 50 years that have cried themselves to sleep because they know they were going to die alone because nobody wants them. No, nobody gives a shit about them, but we should give a fuck about Jada's feelings. A Jada who is publicly embarrassed this man on numerous times. Like, to me, I almost feel bad for Will Smith. Like, almost feel bad. Like, this is a broken man, especially after the watching his speech. He was a broken man that felt like he got backed into an imaginary corner that only Jada and him saw, and he felt like he needed to do, this motherfucker called my wife out on national TV, I'm gonna smack him on national TV. Like, I get it.
And I open-mouthed LOL'd at that joke at first until I turned and saw my wife's reaction, right? Like, that's the interesting part of
what,
it all.
What really pisses me off about it, though, is yesterday, the day after the incident, he then releases a apology to Chris Rock. Not an Instagram video, but a screenshot of a worded note that one, his publicist probably fucking wrote and probably posted, had nothing to do with Will Smith. It's not like he gave a 5-fucking-minute speech 45 minutes after he did it, where he won the award, apologized to everybody but Chris Rock,
and justified what he did about protecting family and whatever else, right?
And went on some bullshit grandstanding speech about how he's a protector and a servant of love. Like, shut the fuck up. Like, this dude needs to get help and take a fucking back seat. You need to go find a room with Louis C.K. and chill the fuck out. Like, you need to go for a while. I cannot believe this is how it went down. I cannot believe the amount of people that are bending over backwards to justify it. Like I said yesterday or the other day, it's like, I can understand it, but there is no justifying it. You know, and when the time comes that I have to crack a dude's head because he says something in public about my 16-year-old daughter, and when I check his ass, he doesn't apologize or walk it back, he doubles down, and I got to do 30 days in county, I don't expect a fucking hero's calling for it. I don't expect society to be like, you know, well, the guy said something ignorant and the dad kind of reacted like, no, I expect everyone to look at me like a fucking savage that just ripped this dude's face off for saying something ignorant about my daughter.
And the dude doesn't press charges. So that way, 40 minutes later, you can get your best actor award on stage.
This is so surreal. It is so messed up. Like, and that's the thing is shame on the Oscars for allowing him to stay. Shame on the Oscars for presenting him an award. Shame on him for getting up and giving like absolving himself of everything and trying to garner the sympathy of the audience, and then goes to an after party and gets jiggy with his fucking award like nothing happened. Like this is what is so fucked up about Hollywood. They live in this fucking bubble where the same rules to society, they don't apply. They have their own laws. They have their own way of life. And you could see just how they protect it. And man, this whole thing is just fucking disgusting. I wish to God Chris Rock would have roasted dude after that. After he said it's a G.I. Jane joke and Will Smith fucking yelled it out. And like, fine, I'll keep your wife's name on my mouth, but you should keep the dicks out of hers. Boom! And fucking just doubled down and fucking let the place burn, Rock. Should have burned the place down, bro.
Well, I didn't get as deep into thought about it because I was just too busy scrolling memes.
You didn't get banned from Facebook and you weren't stuck in a corner from the outside.
So either way, I find it, again, hilarious. The whole way, it is disappointing, but those memes aren't dying anytime soon.
Yeah, if you were on the team Will and think it's okay to smack somebody for a bad joke, man, I hope we hang out sometime soon. I hope we hang out sometime soon. You better watch your fucking mouth, because I'm throwing smacks out to anybody that's got a knock-knock joke for this motherfucker. I don't give a shit. I'm going to get that pimp hand real fucking strong, and anytime a joke hits the floor, you catching the smack.
Yeah. I like the commentary. It's like, he did that to Chris Rock. Does he do that if it's The Rock up there?
Oh, yeah. Nope. Kevin Hart and Chris Rock ain't hosting shit for the rest of their lives. Kevin Hart and Chris Rock ain't hosting shit. Like, yeah, if it's a fucking Jason Momoa up there, if it's like anybody Will Smith size, like, man, he wouldn't have did that to Denzel. He wouldn't have, like...
I'm hoping the comedians just don't let him live it down. Like, I'm hoping the next time Chris Rock does like a presentation, he brings up The Rock or somebody with him and they make open jokes I had to bring some muscle because Will's in the house. And like,
if he goes on a comedy tour anytime soon, I am going. Like, I am, because he ain't going to talk about this shit on a Netflix special. But if he's in a fucking room, like, with a bunch of people just doing his little skits, like, yeah, I am down. Like, I want to go see it now. I just, this is an unbelievable event. Like, I couldn't imagine it happening. Like, the Vegas odds on something like this happening had to have been fucking astronomical.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I just don't get it. I saw some comedian on Twitter make a point, like, for how long now are regular comedians going to have to fear some dude emulating a Will Smith in like a 200 person nightclub? Because they're all,
I mean, they probably
there.
Fear it all the time, right? Like,
they already did. Already did. This happens not all the time, but it happens. You know, you get hecklers, they start roasting the heckler to get him to shut up,
throw stuff up.
And next thing you know, you got some fucking meathead fucking on some Will Smith shit thinking he can go up there and smack a fucking comedian. like this is like nothing good is going to come out of this. Like, and the fact that I honestly don't feel that even Will thinks he did something wrong is scary and fucked up.
Nah, whatever. He's going to get like $5 million to do an exclusive interview with somebody with Vanity Fair or somebody to talk about this. He's going to make out all right. Chris Rock's going to make out all right. In the end, this is great for both of them.
I don't know, man. Will Smith is now look like a like an emotional fucking train wreck on the internet multiple times. It's going to get to the point where the next time he's on screen crying, I don't even think anybody's going to turn it into a meme. They're going to be like, hey, bro, this is getting old. Like, this is really getting old.
How dare you? It'll always be a meme. All right, let's actually just progress here. And let's just talk about other things that happened in the Oscars. I guess we could just do, you know, quick summary of some of the big things. Like, you know, Coda wins Best Picture. Never heard of it.
It's on Apple. And I just never click it. I don't know.
That's why I bring it up. It's the first time that a Best Picture was won by a streaming service. And interesting that it's Apple Plus, right? You know, money's favorite would probably be that Netflix would have done this already or something else. But you get Apple TV Plus that gets it with Coda, which also had, I think it was like 60% of the actors were deaf and stuff in Coda. So everybody who won that essentially like set a first Oscar for somebody who is deaf. So it, interesting. I didn't even hear about it until it won.
Neither did they.
Oh yeah. There we go. Oh man.
Savage. Oh, where's Will? Where's Will?
Somebody,
where's
I was Will? Gonna say, somebody's coming to slap you. All right. Picking back up here. I mean, when you look at the movies in general, we're off the rails. All right, but when you look at the movies like in general on like Best Picture and stuff like that, I mean, for the most part, it's a bunch of movies. And again, it's the Oscars. Like, it's a bunch of celebrating a bunch of movies that the average person doesn't see, hear about. And I think streaming services, I didn't think that the streaming services would make this more obscure going in the future, that these movies would be more accessible. But I think with so many streaming services that now, like, the Best Picture nominees are even more obscure when it was like these movies with limited releases in the theater and stuff like that. Cause at least everybody saw it on a billboard somewhere.
We had a lot of these like big, best movie films over the past always be like only Sundance films. So unless you go to like a film festival, you had no opportunity to see this movie
Best Picture always had to have a national release. So like Best Picture ones were always ones that at least had a limited release. Like they at least had some national.
Well, even the Sundance films get a limited national release, but it's like in the entire city of Chicago, it's at two theaters.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
You had an opportunity to go see it, but it's not in every AMC next to Batman and Spider-Man and all that shit. Like it was like, if you want to see this movie, you got to hunt it down.
But we're not that far removed from when The Irishman was the Netflix thing. In order for them to get considered for Best Picture, they had to put it out in theaters as well.
Yeah.
Right. Like we're not that far removed from that. And now, you know, COVID forced the hand to say, hey, theaters is no longer a threshold that has to be hit. And now it's just, yeah, there's a lot of obscure things in there. You know, Dune got the nomination there as probably the biggest movie on that list. And then everything else is kind of streaming service or West Side Story. I'm sure most people have heard of. I don't know anybody personally who's seen it, but
no.
That's okay. No, that's okay. No. But then as you go through the list, again, it's just there's just a lot of movies. Streaming services definitely dominated as far as like, hey, the major awards, Best Picture Award, Best actor and actress awards.
I do now after the awards need to, like, I wasn't expecting to have to need to watch a Benedict Cumberbatch Western. You know, I don't imagine a dude with the last name Cumberbatch playing in a fucking Western. But I mean, obviously it got a lot of noms and that's also on my streaming services. I don't know. It's just hard to, when there's so much content out in the world, it's just so hard to buckle down and be like, all right, I'm going to give this art piece a good old college try.
Yeah. But I mean, Dune, you're right. You said earlier, Dune did win the most, although again, like they didn't win any big awards. The director didn't win, none of the actors won. They won for best production design and editing and for the score.
They were nominated in a lot of those categories and they won some of the others. So like, as far as a sci-fi movie goes, like I'll take it. Like, you know, and this sets up that if Dune 2, the conclusion of the story, is as good as Dune 1 was, maybe Dune 2 wins. Because, like, Fellowship of the Ring and Two Towers didn't win the Oscars, but, you know, Return of the King won everything. You know, like, it was...
Yeah.
It might be one of those kind of scenarios where they know another one's coming. We don't need to fucking shoot our load on this first one. And they... Well,
until you get to the end of the second Dune and it says part two and not the conclusion, then you could figure it out. But yeah, ultimately let's move out of the Oscars. No real other major stories. And we can just talk about some other entertainment news as we roll out of entertainment. But there was a 5-minute deleted scene that was shown for the Batman with, was it Barry Keoghan as the Joker? I'm kind of glad it wasn't in the movie.
Yeah, it didn't really add anything to the movie. Pattinson was actually kind of shitty in the scene.
Pattinson was, again, like, it was the most lines he would have had in the entire movie, and we didn't like it. We didn't like much of his lines. So.
Well, and, like, they didn't really give you a clear shot of the Joker, like, so I didn't need five minutes of a blurry, like, give it to me, just let me see it. Like, just let me see it. Like, what's it going to be? And then them go into the rest of that drawn-out movie.
And I don't know. If they go with that as like still like, hey, canon, that's the Joker that it's going to be going forward. I don't know how much I like it. I don't know how much I like that portrayal of him at that point. It just gives more questions on the things that I thought that movie just skipped. As in, like, why is Batman at this point just able to go into Arkham and talk to other
people?
He's
got
like
a relationship with Joker already.
He's got a relationship
already
with everybody. Like, and, you know, they paint it out as like he's in his early days and he's in his beginning days and he's just running the streets. But then at the same point, Commissioner Gordon just walks him around everywhere in the movie, like, no big deal. And he can just go into Arkham, apparently.
So it makes it seem like all of the... So, like, the Gotham-Batman relationship, Commissioner Gordon relationship was established. Gordon's not even the commissioner yet.
Yeah.
So it makes it seem like Batman became Batman and instantly had to defeat the Joker.
Right.
And from defeating the Joker, that's how, like, his relationship with the police in Gotham started and blah, blah, blah. But, like, you skipped over the best fucking story that fans want, right? Then start there. Start there. Because now we got to wait for some shitty Pattinson prequel to see the fucking Joker
or flashback in the next one.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like,
and it also goes into my commentary that this was supposed to be Detective Batman. We're supposed to be this great detective.
And why does he need
fucking
help from the Joker?
Worst detective. And he doesn't even ask the Joker questions that would help him solve any of the things. It's kind of like at the point where it's at, it's like two of the murders have already happened. And it just seems like he's just showing him the murder. Like,
and
he's not even asking
isn't
about the
Silence of the Lambs trope kind of like old now?
Yeah.
Isn't the cop needing to tap into the sociopath's brain to catch another sociopath's trope? Aren't we past that? Can we have a more original fucking story than that? Another thing that doesn't fare well for the Batman as the movie as a whole, it's not on the outline, I didn't share it, but because I couldn't find a link, but I saw yesterday that the Sandra Bullock, Channing Tatum,
the Lost
Jewel
City
of the Nile, Lost
beat
City, beat it out at the theater. Like you've had, what's it's only been a week, right? It's been 2 weeks since it released.
This would have been the third, or
it's been out for two
week
whole weeks. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I think they had three weeks at the top.
I don't know. I'm not giving Sandy B that much credit, like, to beat out a Batman. Like No Way Home stayed number one for fucking months.
Yeah, I did think it was going to stay number one until next week when enough people are going to go see the train wreck of Morbius this coming week. So I thought that was going to be what was going to beat it out. I thought it would stay at the top. Yeah, I was surprised that Lost City or whatever that movie is beat it out. But I don't know. It's just this deleted scene just gave me more reasons why I still don't like that Batman movie. And I think it would have been worse with those 5 minutes. But we can just chug along here. Let's jump out of entertainment and to tech, which at this point in time in our show's 3-year journey is NFTs and crypto. Get used to it.
It's either somebody hacking something or digital monies at this point. Not much else going on in the tech world.
Or people hacking digital monies, which is what we got right here. And that's what we have is the VV exchange, for those of you who are not NFT crypto nerds, Vivi is a closed, centralized NFT system. It has its own economy, own money system, sells licensed NFTs that are normally like 3D figures that you can view and interact with within their app system. So it's NFTs, but it's not the same ones that we normally talk about in the sense of technology. And with these, they've got all kinds of licensing deals, right? Like, because it's such a closed system and it's a controlled closed system with an app that people can use credit card to buy. Of course, this is the one that like Marvel, when they went to get into licensing their items into NFTs, they went with Vivi. So did DC. So did a bunch of other companies. Even the United States Postal Service has listed NFTs through Vivi. So the marketplace itself had an in-app token exploit. Hackers, right? It's got to be the Russians. It's got to be somebody. To where they were able to purchase a large amount of gems, which is the money inside that app to put bids out on NFTs, and they had to shut it down because of this exploit that they had. Did you read the article? Do you know what the exploit is?
Yeah. So at first, I don't know if it's been confirmed by Vive. I didn't see if it was absolutely confirmed, but they were saying it was like a expired credit card exploit.
That's what anything that I've seen. I haven't seen it come out as any kind of confirmed, but that's what the rumor was. Yeah, that it was. It wasn't hacker. It wasn't anything sophisticated. It was some 16-year-old probably who had mom and dad's expired credit card thinking it was going to go through and was surprised that it did go through. And then when that was found out, there was a flood of transactions that of buying significant amount, and they had to shut it down.
Yeah, 7 million gems, they said. And then they had to go back and track where those gems went, who bought what. They spent a lot of time reversing transactions, and I don't know, man. This app, I was all gung-ho for it back in the day. I got a ton of NFTs on Vive. I've made a good amount of money selling NFTs on Vive, but they have just really dragged ass on improvements, on rolling out they had plans for if you own an entire collection, you get a certain prize, like the profile aspect of your NFT profile. They haven't rolled any of that out. I can't cash out my gems still. So I got thousands of dollars sitting in an app in weird fake currency that I still can't get my money out. So it feels a lot like I've been playing with Monopoly money for two fucking years, you know. And this just like shares a, you know, doesn't help them at all. You know what I mean? It doesn't give me any faith that these situations are going to get resolved. And building a community on this app is a big part of their success. And this is going to turn a lot of people away from that community.
Yeah, it's just an interesting way for, you know, an exploit, a hack. People always think that it's these sophisticated things. All signs point that this is accurate information, but again, Vive hasn't confirmed it. The marketplace has been having rough days, and we'll see where they go. In the end, they're still going to have some strength behind them because of the deals and the licensing and what they've got going for them. So they're going to recover just fine from both this and their delays in rolling out the ability to pull your money out of that ecosystem and everything else. But I don't know. It's an interesting exploit for sure. But we can talk about more scams in the NFT world as rug pulls are always a thing. And when we talk about traditional NFTs and more like the generative drops, there's been kind of, in my opinion, good news that this week, for the first time, two men were arrested for fraud for launching an NFT and intentionally rug pulling away from it. So two men started an NFT. They raised $1.1 million worth of funds in their 10,000 generative art project. And they did deliver. Like, it's not a matter that they just took $1.1 million and gave nothing in return. They did give an NFT in return, right? People did get a digital image, a generative digital image of what they got, but they didn't deliver on all these other things that they said they would do. And they
intentionally... That's what I want to discuss about technically what you consider a rug pull. Like, I understand that if they had laid out a road of doing a video game associated with your NFT, doing a token, doing it, like, I understand if they said that they were going to do all these things and then they ended up not doing it. But essentially, in the NFT space now, it's volatile. It's very risky. Shouldn't all you expect from an NFT project is the actual NFT itself? And if everything else comes through, that's like a a good, like a sign of that you invested in a good company. You know, like if you're a stockholder and you invest in a company that has all these plans on revolutionizing the tech space or blah, 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 and you invest and they roll out their initial app, but after that, they can't get it up and running and they go bankrupt. Do you get to call that stock a rug pull? Like no, it wasn't. It's a failed. It's a failed company. It's a failed.
If the founders sell that stock and they tell you that you know the funds from that stock were going to fund certain business growth and development and whatever else, and then they just walk away that money and disappear. Yeah, that's fraud.
Yeah,
and that's what these two were arrested on, right? They raised this money. They did deliver an NFT, right? What people traditionally consider the NFT, the art. But again, NFT is more like a share, right? It's digital ownership into something. In this regard, they did say that they're going to deliver a video game, a 3D version of the NFTs, a video game, some other utility capabilities.
So we're in a weird space with NFTs because most of like the promises that come along with your NFTs, it's not an actual contract. It's more of a social contract, a trust agreement that you believe the people running this project are going to hold up their end.
That's why this is going to be a fascinating trial that I'm going to be very interested to see how it gets prosecuted, right? Because, you know, what case can they make? Is them posting their roadmap in Discord and in announcements and stuff to the people that are buying, does that equal a contract? Does that equal a financial obligation to deliver? And are they going to effectively be charged with this and be put in jail for financial fraud?
I'm playing devil's advocate here. I think what they did was wrong. Don't get me wrong. Like
they even went to Discord like mocking the people, telling them that they were running off with it and stuff. Like
you're a jagoff. But what I'm more worried about is an artist, an NFT creator that really does have plans, grandiose plans to do an NFT and just merely fails. They're you know,
well, I'm just a guy that draws
pitiful penguins, and if my tech guy that was supposed to be, you know, doing my token, or my video game guy that is developing my video game ends up quitting on me and running off, and now these plans that I had doing fall through because I don't have the manpower to do it, am I the jagoff? Do you consider me a rug pull?
To a lot of people, you're a jagoff.
Am I contractually obligated to a people that bought a bunch of silly penguins to refund, or am I legally in jeopardy now because
that's not quit on me, right? The intentional misleading.
But that's what I'm worried about.
Fraud.
Like where do we draw the line? Because this is all, again, the Wild West. There is no regulation. There is no roadmap for how, when these things happen, what are actual legal recourses. So I'm worried about. Yeah. fuck these frosty dudes. Like,
well,
these
the
dudes are jagoffs.
These frosty guys at the time when they got arrested for this, these two were also behind another NFT project that I was in the Discord, like watching the release of it as they had a Twitter following of 100,000 people, called this animated NFT project called Embers. And these two people were behind that one, looking at launching again, I think sometime this week or next week, to probably make another 1.5 million because it was going to be a higher mint price as an animated NFT and a more revolutionary one. And I'm sure they had the intention of just walking away again. And this is, again, the dangers of the NFT world, and I wouldn't have minted it because they weren't a docs team, they weren't transparent.
But while you were in that Discord, were there not people like shouting from the rooftops, "Hey, these are those jagoffs"? They did
no, because nobody knew they weren't a docs team. Nobody knew who they were. They didn't release who they were, right? And that's a lot of people in the NFT world. They hide behind the veil of anonymity because they say it's safe, it's safer, and they don't want to dox themselves, which I always find, like, I guess I get it to some degree, but I'll tell you, like, I'm not going to buy into your project if you're not doxed, because, like, I'm not going to invest in a company that the CEO isn't doxed, and we don't know who the fuck that guy is running the business. Like, you're literally running a business, because I don't just buy cute pictures. Like, that's not what I do. I buy into things that I think are going to deliver, that are building out
have
into this ecosystem.
And,
like, so you're a business. I expect you to do things for a while, and if you're doing that anonymously, well, I think I'm gonna back out of which is what I felt about Embers. But it's just interesting that Embers was this team. It was another one that was probably going to do well, huge following, did all the things right, social media marketing, billowed themselves up to 100 plus thousand followers on Twitter and everything else. And boom, caught up in this. So NFT world, scary place sometimes. Know what you're investing in. But I, like I said, I think this is a good thing, at least for setting a precedent. I think this is a good thing to put this on trial, start to set some legal precedents on what is a legal rug pull, right? Like, I hope this is called like the rug pull precedent from this point on. and it sets a framework on like legally what is the minimum that a founder has to do to not be financially liable.
Yeah, we need like actual language and a structure on what fraud is and what just failure is. I think there needs to be a good line drawn.
All right, we just talked a little bit about some of the bad parts of the NFT world. Let's talk about the best thing in the NFT world, which is an upcoming NFT project launched by somebody. I'm sure Bill Murray's not doing this, but it's about Bill Murray. It's a 1,000 NFT project of just different images of Bill Murray. And these images are all tied to stories that he's going to tell of just crazy things that he's done, some that are rumors that he's going to confirm, some stories that he says that nobody's ever heard before. But in the end, this biographical NFT collection from Bill Murray is the greatest thing.
It is. Like, he is a national treasure. Bill Murray himself should be minted on the blockchain forever.
100%. Like, these stories, like, they're going to live forever.
Yeah, as a Chicagoan, he represents our city every day in some of the best ways. Like, I am all for this.
This again, I think this is...
When mint?
April. The first 100 of the 1,000 are going to be launched in April sometime. I haven't given a firm date. But like, yeah, this is what NFTs are for. This is the best version of the NFT. This is like its final form, is Bill Murray. And what I'm hoping is, it doesn't say... What I'm hoping is that like there's some level of like commercial rights to these stories, because how great would it be if like some decentralized movie company or animated company buys a bunch of them and they animate these crazy Bill Murray stories, or they reenact them in some ridiculous way. Like, that's the greatest degen production that could exist. So I hope that it comes with some level of commercial rights
well,
to do it.
Well, I mean, this is going to start happening all across the board, right? Like, I know... I'm pretty sure you're in the Discord too. Like, Sylvester Stallone has an NFT coming out called Sly Guys. Those things are great as well. Like if you've seen any of the previews of what these Sly Guys are, like as a kid who grew up on Tango and Cash and Over the Top.
Yeah.
And like, man, do I love these fucking NFTs. Like, so yeah, it's only a matter of time before The Rock comes out with one. Like, if you are a beloved household name celebrity, you're coming out with your own NFT project. It's there's not a doubt in my mind.
Yeah, and Bill said that this is going to come with
Nicolas Cage NFT dropping.
Oh, you know it's in the works. That shameless son of a bitch. You know it's in the works.
And oh my God, can you imagine him? Can you imagine the NFTs? Like, they're gonna be so
how
great.
How brilliant would it be if he launched an NFT collection along with this movie that he says he's retiring from? What's the name of the movie? The ridiculous movie he's got coming out where he's... it's about his own genius or whatever else, right? Like, I'm gonna look it up while we talk, because it's...
I just want a Crazy Eyes Nick Cage NFT. I want the Raising Arizona Drunk Nicolas Cage NFT. Like, I want them. There's like tons of traits. Like, give me them all.
Yeah.
Who else would be a great NFT? Steve Buscemi. Buscemi NFTs.
To go back to it, the Nicolas Cage movie that he's producing about himself is called The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. No. Like, that's a legit movie. Like, this is coming out this year in 2022.
That's the name I call my dick.
And how great would it be if he launched an NFT of himself along with the movie grandizing?
Gold.
Like, it's
pure gold.
No, it's the best thing.
Pure gold.
If he's not doing it, then he doesn't have the right publicist. That's all it comes down to.
We're here. We're waiting for you guys. We got the ideas. Like, but yeah, that's the thing is NFTs are going to jump the shark soon, have a massive bubble pop, and then kind of settle in this space of community art and utility that will be around forever, right? Like,
NFTs are going to continue to jump the shark.
Yeah, well, I mean, but we're escalating to the point where people are going to like they're just going to roll their eyes at NFTs, everybody doing the NFTs, and we're going to have like an exodus of just shitty products and shitty, like NFTs will never go away, but this NFT hype is like hitting at its peak the minute you have, you know, AMC giving away shitty fucking JPEGs called NFTs at every movie release you go to, when you have every household name celebrity jumping in the Web3 space trying to do a project to keep their name relevant, when you have basketball stars rug pulling, like we're in this oversaturated NFT space kind of right now, where it started out as what it was intended for, you know, artists creating art, and now it's turned into kind of like business projects tied in with art. But eventually we're hitting just a look at me, I have an NFT space, and that bubble's gonna pop, and we'll get back to the genuine purpose of what the NFT and the blockchain is supposed to be doing space.
I think one of the beauties of the NFT world is that it's so accessible, it's so easy to do. So people are going to constantly be jumping the shark, but then you're going to have just people that emerge because they're innovating, they're doing unique things, they're actually building, and people will eventually be able to sniff out the shitty projects, because right now it's like everybody's got no track record doing this. But here in a couple of years, like you're going to be able to look back at a new NFT, and you're going to be able to look at the founders and the people, and you're going to say that, hey, they've got a track record. They've supported these other communities. They've done this. They come from this ecosystem. Like there's going to be people that are going to emerge as innovators, as leaders, thought leaders in the space, technologists. Yeah, I mean, like it's going to happen.
As a man who did a lot of drugs when I was younger, I kind of look at this as man, every NFT purchase is like a drug deal. Either you know your dealer or you don't. You either trust that you're getting some of that good, or that you're going home and snorting baby powder all night.
Like, just because you don't know the dealer doesn't mean that you don't do the deal. It just means that
that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like if you need it, you need it, you know, but like that's the thing. And then over time, the people that are bad will be weeded out. The people that are good, you know, it's going to get to a point where nobody will invest in your project if you're not doxxed and don't have a track record, you know, or at least, you know, have your name out there so that if you do fuck people over, we know not to do it again. You know, it'll work itself out naturally, but a lot of people are going to kind of lose some ETH and just be stuck with a weird cartoon.
Oh yeah, there's going to be some bad taste in people's mouth, but we'll get through. All right, we're getting a little long on the show here. Let's push through a couple more topics to go through. I'm trying to pick out which ones I want to definitely get to. We can briefly talk about, it's not necessarily this week news, although it just keeps coming up. Earlier in this month, we had the crypto bill or executive order passed by Biden. And there's just been more people looking and starting to give some commentary about some of the things that were in it. And in the crypto world, most people just thought it was good, right? It didn't throw like a hammer down on legislation or anything that threatened the space. It really just said to, hey, investigate it more. Like, let's look at actually having some legislative solutions towards regulation, which is actually wanted.
It's because everybody writing this bill don't know what the fuck they're talking about. It was basically a Senate bill of begging people to please come and explain this crazy shit to us so we can write a fucking bill on it.
But we want legislative change. We want legislative regulation, because what we don't want is it just to be regulated by like the whims of the SEC, right? If it's just by the three-letter, you know, regulators that essentially have free, full power, we don't want them to have the power.
John Stewart on that new show he has, The Problem, did one on the economy, and he did an interview with the head of the SEC. And I'm going to tell you right now, I ain't worried about the SEC. The SEC don't do shit. They can't do shit. They won't do shit. They're getting gutted. They're getting defunded every fucking day. The president of the head of the SEC was on that interview and looked like the weakest man I've ever seen. And John Stewart just kind of like in the nicest way ripped this dude like, well, if you can't do this and you can't do that, what can you do? And he was like, I don't even know. I don't think we can do shit. Like, we really have no power. We have no funding. Like, we can't do shit. So as far as I don't know. Like, I'm not worried about the SEC. I'm more worried about Grandpa Joe and a bunch of boomers making legislation on shit that they can't see the future in and understand. I mean, my grandma's the same age as the president, and she walks around here calling it cyber money every day. Like, you and your cyber monies.
I get that, but you know, go ahead and say the SEC doesn't have power, but then talk to anybody who's invested in Ripple about how long that their money's been tied up and they can't have access to it on certain exchanges, and how long that the price of Ripple's been depressed because it was classified as a security and it's been held up in legal legal cases since then because the SEC just made a decision and called them a security, right? There was no legislation.
Well, and then you got guys like fucking Elon toying with the goddamn markets like it's like a toddler, and they can't do shit either about that. Like, it from what, like, you got to watch that interview. It's a good interview. If you haven't watched the show The Problem with Jon Stewart, it's actually pretty well put together show.
Nah, I haven't watched it.
It, like, that interview with the SEC really kind of was like made me sit back and be like, well, damn, no wonder rich people get away with everything. You're a bitch.
But the interesting part, I think, that didn't get talked a ton about was in that executive order, Biden talked about investigating and rolling out the framework. So he tasked people, SEC specifically, to investigate and roll out the framework on how we would do a central bank digital currency, how the U.S. government would provide a digital currency. And there's now been, you know, it's enough times passed, a lot of people talking about it, and some of the articles that I've read are just, man, it's one way or the other, right? People in the crypto world think like, oh, this just mainstreams crypto. It's the best thing in the world. And then from an authoritarian standpoint, a social experiment standpoint, like the threat to our financial systems by a digital currency and like our financial freedoms, we'll say, right? Like, that's the one thing you get with a central digital currency is like, they know every dollar you ever spend. Like, there is no paper money in that system. Like, it is just your digital wallet that's on your phone. Every dollar you ever spend, every dollar you ever make, every dollar that you save and what you do with it is 100% trackable.
These are all valid concerns. They've been trying to get rid of the penny for 20 years and they can't do it. So I don't know how concerned we should be about this.
But it's just, again, it's an interesting social commentary in the sense that, like, again, people just don't tend to understand, you know, from both sides, you know, that whether it's going to be the greatest thing in the world or whether, like, everybody should be scared. But there's legitimate cases on both sides. There's legitimate understanding, if you have to understand kind of the whole problem to have an informed conversation. And there's just so few people that can do it, right? And, like, just like you said, in the government, like, I think the executive order, it was definitely good for crypto in the sense that it just wasn't bad. Anything coming out of the government that's not bad for crypto is good for crypto. But there's a lot of interesting conversation they had around this. And we're not going to do it all today, but we'll have some more of them in the future. As you know, we're going to see China do it. We're going to see, you know, the United States at least investigating and looking at doing it. A lot of the major markets in, you know, let's call it 20 years time. Let's see how many of them are operating on some level of trackable, traceable, digital exclusive.
Well, China's
currency.
Doing it. I would like to see us wait to see a more democratic country roll one out and see how they, like, I don't.
No, for sure. Like, let a smaller
let
country
Germany,
with a much smaller
let
GDP
Germany
figure
do this shit.
Like,
let somebody else that is a democratic state that, because that's the thing, is like, man, I honestly, they're going to tell you that it's not being tracked and blah, 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 but Snowden still can't come home. Like, that's really all I got to say. Like, they're going to tell you one thing, but Snowden still can't come home. So take that with a grain of salt, take it how you want.
Talk about a little bit of hacking news. And what we've got this last week was this huge announcement. It went across the crypto world and spaces because everybody's always worried about losing their money online. But Google had to do an emergency security update to fix one problem, which, like, that's something that Google doesn't do, is to, like, to push updates to Google Chrome or whatever else for one specific security issue. When they do updates, they let them pile up for a little bit, a couple of little exploits, harmless things, and then they do a major patch of a bunch of issues. In this instance, they rolled out an emergency security update. It went across everywhere in, like, the crypto world and stuff like that to immediately close your Chrome browser, make sure that when you restart it, that you check what version it's using it, and if you need to force the update, because there was a... They didn't give the full details of what the exploit was, but from most of the things that I was able to read, it said that it was tied to like extensions that you could have into Chrome and like MetaMask and your crypto wallets and all that stuff. Those are extensions into Chrome. And that was the big threat, was, you know, whether people were going to be able to get access into your crypto wallets through this exploit. So if you haven't updated Google Chrome in a long time, or you don't know if you've closed Google Chrome and reopened it. If you're somebody like me who just keeps like a million tabs open at all times and never shuts anything down, you might want to close it, reopen, and make sure it updated. But then on top of that, you understand that it's not just Google Chrome. That's what most people understood it as, is this is a Google Chrome issue. It's a Chromium issue, which even the Microsoft Edge browser is a Chromium web browser. So is Brave browser, so are other ones. So they're that use the Google Chrome.
Basically, whatever you use to go on the internet, update
just
that shit.
Just update now. Update that close shit. It out, update it, restart. Just to make sure that this exploit is not a threat. And you know, I haven't seen any data that says like how many accounts were affected by it, or you know, if any real attacks took place or crypto wallets were drained. I haven't seen anything that that verifies that. But obviously, it was a serious issue, and make sure you take care of it. That's the PSA. All right, and let's go ahead and just do one more story here. And we've got just a fascinating way to end out on some future tech. And a paralyzed man was able to speak is a loose term, was able to communicate his first words in months using brain implants. And what he took months to train himself and train this thing to ask, the first sentences he asked for is that he asked for beer. And he asked for music from Tool played loudly. So get drunk on heavy metal is what the paralyzed man asked for as his first words. And then he's asked for some other things like curry and to tell his four-year-old son that he loves him and other things. But this patient, so this is somebody with ALS, you know, it's what like Stephen Hawking had, where you know, Stephen Hawking was only able to communicate because he had a single cheek muscle that didn't become paralyzed, and he was able to control his systems through that. This guy is completely paralyzed. Even his eyelids, nothing works. So he has no muscular control. And this brain implant, one, it proves that like his brain's fully is functioning, right? He's not in a vegetated state. His brain is still processing. He's still hearing what's going on around him. He just can't move to respond. And then it took them months to train this brain system in a kind of a binary way where like letters were presented to him and he just said yes or no, right? On what letter to put next. And then over time was able to train himself and train the system to slowly but still effectively communicate what he wanted. And again, this just goes to show the more sophisticated we get with these things like Neuralink and stuff like that, it could really open up some level of quality of life for people with a wide range of disabilities. This one being, you know, about as severe as it gets.
Well, you know why, you know, I pay code. I have a child that is nonverbal, that brain development issues. So anytime I see these stories on CRISPR, because it's a gene deficiency. So anytime I see these stories on CRISPR or even like Neuralink bridging these kind of neuron gaps, gives me, you know, a lot of hope that I might be able to hear my daughter speak or sing a song one day. And you know, so I try to follow these things greatly. I'm not sure this tech is an advancement of anything kind of new. I think this is just kind of improving on the existing tech that we've done stories on in the past. It's just a really good story because, you know, even if it is just the same kind of tech that we've been promoting, you know, you want to hear the stories of a man being able to communicate like the things that they want, that bring some joy to these people's lives. You know, I think a lot of what COVID even kind of like expressed to us that is, as humans, we're very social species. And if you take that out of our lives, it wreaks havoc on people's sanity, on their well-being, on their mental state. You know, so especially these people that get these degenerative diseases, that they lose their faculties, you know, to be able to speak your entire life and then never be able to speak again, to not be able to see, hear. These are devastating things that happen to people that many overcome, and they should be applauded for that. And that, you know, I commend the you know, disabled people of the world for persevering and pushing through. But I do love these stories where the guy, you know, I just want a beer and some fucking heavy metal, man. Like all, yeah, you motherfuckers, like all you motherfuckers have just been giving me Jello and fucking playing elevator music. Like, I want fucking beer and Tool. Shit. You know, like you gotta love that, man. And if they didn't immediately run and get that dude a beer and blare some fucking heavy metal, shame on you, man. Shame on you.
And I think that right there is an uplifting way to end a week in nerd news. Again, I don't know, thanks for listening. We got 3 years of this under our belt.
Yeah, we're going strong. Doesn't mean we don't need the shares. Doesn't mean we don't need the likes. Doesn't mean we don't need you to join that Nerd Cantina group at www.thenerdcantina.com/community. Come on in. The memes have been fire, man. it's been a meme heavy little bit now. So come on in and join and keep listening to the show. We're going to keep giving you your weekly news and keeping you informed on some of the important stories going on in the world that us nerds care about.
All right. Talk to you again next week, nerds.
See ya.